We didn't grab anything, we just grabbed our son. At that point, the water had gotten to about a metre and a half at the back of our house. Grabbed him and had to get out. So I was putting Dawson into the car, my son. I had dropped the car keys and it just went in the flood.
A family has had a terrifying race to safety when 1 month's worth of rainfall hit in just 1 hour. It was the biggest rainfall event in 30 years, leaving parts of New South Wales declared natural disaster zones. And calls for answers from the federal government after another group of suspected asylum seekers arrives onto the mainland by boat, the third in the past 6 months.
You know, from a northern point of view, it sort of seems ludicrous that majority of our assets are to the south of the country, possibly defending against an attack from Antarctica or something.
I'm Michelle Stanley and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Garryarra Country, Port Hedland. Parts of New South Wales have been declared as natural disaster zones after the biggest rainfall in 30 years. Thousands were evacuated from their homes and more than 140 people were rescued from floodwaters after Friday night's torrent, which extended north from Sydney to Hawkesbury and south to Shoalhaven. We'll start today in Illawarra, where residents have been left devastated after creeks broke their banks and became raging floodwaters in that deluge, which hit early on Saturday morning. Kelly Fuller is with you from Wollongong. Kelly, can you describe what that rain was like as it was coming in?
Yes, it was really extraordinary, Michelle. We'd been watching the bomb radar. You become glued to it as one of these big systems starts to move down the coast, and we were seeing the volume of rainfall further to the north and further to the northwest, and then it sort of moved in and settled in on Friday afternoon, and it just was constant, the rain. It wasn't like there were thunderstorms, but it was just heavy, and then into the night it continued, and you wondered sort of what you were going to wake up to in the morning and what fell in that space between Friday night and Saturday morning. We heard today from the SES some official figures between 230 and 270 millimetres, just an extraordinary amount of water rushing down the escarpment and flowing straight down into all the suburbs that sit along this beautiful coastline here. And it's just, you know, from the northern Illawarra right down into Shell Harbour, Kiama, down to the Shoalhaven, just so much water absolutely just gushing through the system. And you know, what was interesting as it sort of picked up, I woke up early. I remember on Friday morning looking out my window. We live in the Shell Harbour region and wondering what the Macquarie Rivulet was doing, and could not believe how much it had risen in the morning. And then the rain just hit again very substantially for about another 2 hours. That did include thunderstorms. And that's when a lot of the devastation happened for so many people in the northern part of the Illawarra, where we heard about small little granny flats being lifted from the back of properties and pushed down flooded roadways, where the waters overrun creeks and turned in directions that they hadn't turned previously, rushing through people's homes, smashing through walls, pushing cars all along streets, damaging railway lines. The rail line is out in basically from Sydney down the south coast, which is one of the biggest commuter corridors in New South Wales. It's extraordinary. So much damage to people's homes, to their businesses as well. And we've seen lots of people still cleaning up today. The cleanup's been, you know, still going and ongoing, but quite an extraordinary bit of work by the community to try and get on top of this mud everywhere still, as so many people would appreciate after a devastating flood like this. But a lot of effort, the focus from some of the councils, just to get that all that rubbish moved away quickly so people don't have any sort of sanitation or health concerns.
Wow, it just sounds absolutely phenomenal. Has the area ever seen rain like this before?
Yes, and I'm not a local, but I've been here about 5 years, and you really don't meet anyone who's a local who won't tell you about the 98 floods and how bad they were and how much damage they caused. There were lives lost in that flood as well, which is much more devastating. We have had people injured in this flooding situation, but nothing that we've heard of is too serious. But some people are a bit mixed as to whether or not it is as bad as that event or not. But some people are vehemently say it is much worse than what it was. The local mayor says he's very concerned that as we see these East Coast lows seeming to reappear in more frequent patterns, this is the kind of very devastating weather system that will impact a community like the Illawarra, where this heavy system builds, it bashes in against the escarpment and just causes this sort of big weather event for a community. So certainly people will tell you 98 was really bad. But what the community members will also tell you, and we spoke to some residents today in a shop in Thirroul, a florist, she had woken up, knew the rain was coming, monitoring the bomb, doing all the right things, lifted all the pots and plants, although they're not that adverse to water, but still she got them off the ground. She also woke up at 5 a.m., knew the rain was coming. She lives about a block behind her shop and knew that if as her house was being inundated, her shop was already under. So she ran up to the shop, saw what was going on, really couldn't do much, had to wait for the water to pass through, started cleaning through her property because she had to get flowers to all the brides she was delivering to in the morning, and then went back to her house and started the clean up there. So, but she told us this is the third time, like in 3 years, she's had similar water events rush through her property, and she's just exhausted. It's the emotional toll, to be honest, Michelle, this sort of 48 hours on that we're really seeing wear on the people's faces and the stories they're telling us, because they just can't understand why more mitigation can't be done in the escarpment to try and possibly stop the huge inundation that's continually coming through their properties. And as we do see these systems repeat patterns and more frequency, they're wondering, you know, how long they'll be able to persevere with the cost of the cleanup, and then additional questions about insurance and coverage along those lines.
Yeah, it is so concerning. We heard from John Dark. He's been a long-term resident in Thirroul, and he said that this has been the worst flooding that he's ever experienced.
So this one, it was just the ferocity in a short space of time, the volume of water. 98, it had been raining for 3 or 4 days beforehand, softening up the ground and that. And you sort of got a sense, and I remember driving home, had the Motorola flip phone, trying to contact my wife, and she said she's leaving the house. And then it went dead, going, okay. I couldn't get down the pass. But, yeah, this is far worse than even 98. Yeah.
In terms of the damage.
The power, just the power of the volume of water at the time and the power of it, yeah.
And residents had to leave really quickly. One family in Thirroul had a really terrifying race to safety.
We were sleeping. We sleep on the top section, so we actually didn't really realise what was going on. We had neighbours coming and smashing on all of our doors to try and wake us up. Yeah, at 5 o'clock, somebody had come round and finally woken us up. We realised what was happening and knew that we had to get out immediately. So we didn't grab anything, we just grabbed our son. At that point, the water had gotten to about a metre and a half at the back of our house, grabbed him and had to get out. Putting Dawson into the car, my son, I had dropped the car keys and it just went in the flood. So then we were rushing around trying to find any other keys to the other car, and eventually we got away at about 5:30. My cousins live around the corner up on a high hill, and that was the only place we could go. So we went there, and at 6:30 we came back to a completely flooded house and a completely flooded backyard.
What was that feeling like for you coming home and seeing your house? You've just moved in a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, what was it like coming back to the flooding?
Yeah, we moved in 2 weeks ago, so we haven't even unpacked all of our boxes. We had art all on the floor, all around, trying to figure out where we were going to put it. And so it was just devastating, just seeing all of our stuff just kind of ruined. Luckily, a lot of it has been salvageable, except for, you know, some furniture and quite a lot of our sentimental stuff. But yeah, just the shock. I think the whole of yesterday I was just walking around, just not knowing what to do, not knowing where to start, and just lost.
So what's been the response from the community? You know, you've got this huge cleanup on your hands. What's happened?
It's been amazing, the support from the community. From about 6:30 onwards, we had just people, neighbours, people from the other side of Thirroul coming over and just bringing their shovels on and their mops and saying, what can we do? Where do we start? Or not even asking us, just going in and doing it because we didn't know where to start. And also just giving that emotional support. And there were kids bringing around chicken sandwiches. There was people bringing around Easter eggs, people bringing around cases of beer. We were supplying pizza. We didn't know a single person when we moved here, and we moved here to be a part of a community, and that's what we got yesterday.
So that was Thrill resident Jemima McDonald. You're listening to Australia Wide, and Kelly Fuller is with you from Wollongong. We're discussing the aftermath of this major weather event, which really smashed New South Wales over the last few days, particularly Friday and Saturday. Now, Kelly, it has been declared a natural disaster zone. What effect does that have?
So the state and federal governments have agreed and made that funding available. It covers, I think there's 13 different council areas, and the Illawarra is part of that. Of course, we've got Wallandilly, Wollongong, Shell Harbour, Shoalhaven, Kiama, all covered by this, which is a relief to the community. It means there's financial support available for individuals, businesses, sporting groups, and people who've lost their fields have been flooded under. It helps with the cost of removing so much waste as well. The councils have the burden of that, but they're going to have that covered by the state government. So that is a relief because, like all councils around New Australia, they're under extreme financial pressure, and this is just another one of those situations. It's the biggest issue we've heard, Michelle, though, is people who are wondering about their insurance. The Premier's come out with serious messaging today that, look, insurance companies better pay, and that's the sort of the line from the state government. We haven't heard concerns from the community that insurers are balking, so there hasn't been that question. But the really significant question we've heard is from people who don't have insurance or haven't been able to get insurance. They're undercovered. We've heard people who had only like a transitional insurance, so they've just moved into a home and they hadn't got the flood coverage yet. And the florist I mentioned previously, she's uninsurable, deemed because of the flood zoning from Wollongong Council. So she's looking at $30,000 for insurance on her business. She put out sort of 30 submissions to get that. One company got back to her, said you can have $30,000, but only if you remove flood damage from it. We won't cover you for that. So the situation arising now, Michelle, is more of these communities affected by multiple natural disasters. How will they get insurance coverage? And that's the question for all governments in Australia and the Australian Insurance Council about what they're going to do to look at securing insurance for communities who are impacted by repeated natural disasters.
Yeah, a lot of questions and a lot of cleanup to come, no doubt.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, the exhaustion of the cleanup, but still a lot of really positivity in the community about how people came out over the weekend, Michelle, and just picked up a shovel, picked up a rake and got in and started moving the mud out for community members, people they didn't know, stepping in, bringing around chicken sandwiches, leftover Easter eggs and saying, what can we do to help? Because we all want to get you through this. So, you know, there's that little bit of warm fuzziness that I can feel right now as I'm talking to you, just thinking about all these incredible community members who have all pitched in so hard to support each other after a horrible weekend.
Yeah, it really brings out that community spirit, doesn't it? Kelly Fuller in Wollongong, thank you so much for your time on Australia Wide today.
Thank you.
Now, the Blue Mountains region also copped this deluge. It caused a major landslide, cutting off the only access road for the Megalong Valley. Emma McMahon from the winery Dry Ridge Estate says the concern is now turning to what's next after a chaotic weekend.
Saturday I was in fight or flight mode, fielding phone calls. Feel like I held it together pretty well. We had hundreds of people booked at the cellar door, so sort of dealt with all of those bookings. And then we had a wedding at the venue on Saturday, of which logistically was a bit of a challenge to still try and hold. And then yesterday I felt like the waterworks started, and I wasn't coping as well yesterday, but today I feel like logistically I'm in damage control mode.
And what's the impact of this road closure on your business, how does that make you feel with what's gone on?
So we are a very face-to-face business. So our experience, our wine tasting experience, we usually have hundreds of guests at the cellar door every weekend doing wine tasting, and that's where we sell all of our wine and we do cheese boards and charcuterie. So losing hundreds and hundreds of people and guests every week financially is enormous. But then I guess my priority is the wedding. So we've got booked in. We do weddings most weekends. We're still not sure how long this is going to go on for. So at the moment, I'm just trying to sort out the next few weddings, find them other venues. But, I mean, financially, this is enormous. I couldn't even put a figure on it at the moment.
Emma McMahon from Dry Ridge Estate Winery in the Blue Mountains, Megalong Valley. She was speaking with Hamish Cole. That landslide has cut off the only access road to that area, leaving up to 300 residents and visitors cut off from their homes and accommodation.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
There are calls for greater military protection of Australia's northwest after the arrival of a third group of suspected asylum seekers in 6 months in Western Australia's Kimberley. A group of foreign nationals were discovered at a remote airbase in the state's north on Friday, and another man was found by authorities on Sunday after being separated from the group. In Broome, reporter Roseanne Maloney has been covering this story. Roseanne, what do you know about these arrivals at this stage?
Well, Michelle, Border Force has certainly remained tight-lipped about details on these men. But we know that over the weekend on Saturday, we were alerted to the fact that a boat had potentially arrived in the northern Kimberley coast up near an area called the Truscott Air Base. So that's very far north on that coastline and not too far away from the Kalumburu Aboriginal community up there as well. Later that day, on the Saturday, police then released that they were looking for a man that had become separated from a group that they say arrived on an unknown vessel in that area. Now, by Sunday, police continued that search operation and then they found this man who they say had become separated from the group. They found him on a track not far from the airbase, but they said, you know, it's unknown how he became separate from the group, but yeah, he was in a relatively good condition. But from hearing that this unknown, you know, vessel had arrived on the coastline, we then saw that there was a Nauru Airlines plane that arrived in the northern Kimberley, just around the Curtin Airbase area. And then we saw other planes transporting from the Truscott Airbase area over to Curtin. And then that Nauru Airlines plane flew over towards Brisbane to Amberley, and that has since headed off to Nauru. In terms of the exact details, as I mentioned, Australian Border Force has remained tight-lipped. We don't know exactly how many men, but we do know that there has been another boat that's reached the shoreline up here.
And this is the third instance over 6 months, is that right?
Yeah, so since November last year, we've had three boats of suspected asylum seekers arrive up here in the Kimberley. The first, in November last year, there was 12 people that arrived in basically the same area as this latest boat arrival, near that Truscott Air Base area. Then earlier this year in February, there was another 39 men that were found wandering near the remote Aboriginal community of Beagle Bay. They were found across, you know, several locations. I think it's about three locations near that Beagle Bay area. So it is certainly, you know, not the first boat to arrive. And it has definitely been raising concerns on the ground up here that, you know, there has been a third one that's reached the shore in that amount of time.
You've been speaking with some of the locals and local leaders, community leaders in the Kimberley. What's their response been?
I spoke yesterday with David Menzel, who's the Shire President of the Wyndham East Kimberley Shire. Now, that Shire covers the area of the Truscott Airbase where this group of people were found. He's, you know, it's quite extraordinary because he basically said it's not surprising. It's at that point now where, you know, people up in that area, they've kind of lost a bit of hope. It sounded like almost that, you know, that boats would not be arriving to that area. Specifically, you know, he talked about his concerns that, you know, as this goes on, that there's just not enough defence presence and monitoring. So here's what he told me.
I think it'd be good to get a signal out of Canberra that they do, you know, they do actually take it seriously up here. You know, we've got over 40% of Australia's exports going out of this corner of the country and we've got, you know, a few soldiers somewhere guarding the whole show. So, you know, it just seems a bit of a joke that that this sort of thing is happening, not frequently, but it's able to happen, and we don't seem to be able to deal with a boat arriving on our shores.
Matthew Nicola from the Northwestern Defence Alliance has backed these calls as well. So he, Michelle, told me that, he does acknowledge that there has been, you know, some defence, an increase in defence spending somewhat. Areas like the Kimberley and the Pilbara are at risk of, you know, if there's not enough protection, how are they going to protect major infrastructure in those areas? Here's what he told me.
Yeah, well, obviously it highlights the lack of patrolling that we are doing on the coastline throughout northern Australia. The fact that it's a third boat that they've found, it raises the question if there's others that haven't been found that have got through. As you know, off the Pilbara and Kimberley coast, we have a huge amount of offshore oil and gas sort of investments out there. It is the powerhouse of the country, and currently it's totally undefended and very close to all of the activity that's happening to our north. You know, from a northern point of view, it sort of seems ludicrous that majority of our assets are to the south of the country, possibly defending against an attack from Antarctica or something.
Matthew Nicola from the Northwest Defence Alliance. And you're hearing from Roseanne Maloney, a reporter from Broome. We're talking about this group of suspected asylum seekers coming to the Australian mainland over the weekend. How has the federal government responded, Roseanne?
Michelle, the federal government has been quick to defend its border policy. We heard this morning from the Assistant Minister for Defence, Matt Thistlethwaite, who said that, you know, despite this other boat arrival, Operation Sovereign Borders remains strong. And he said that the government was bolstering funding. Here's what he said.
The policy is working. Unfortunately, you have some boats arrive under the previous government as well. The majority are turned back, but there are occasions where you do have some arrivals and they're processed in accordance with Operation Sovereign Borders. And that is that that people will be transferred to a third country. So the integrity of that policy and that system remains in place. And we're bolstering the funding and the program to ensure that it operates strongly into the future. And there's been no change to the operation of that policy when the Albanese government was elected.
Now, we've also heard from the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, and he's certainly backed what the Assistant Defence Minister has said, reiterating that Australia's border policy has not changed since 2013 and it remains strong. And he said it's still doing its job.
So, Roseanne, where are the suspected asylum seekers now?
Well, from what we've seen with these Nauru Airlines planes arriving, we've seen that they have been, or at least, you know, a number of people have been transported over to Nauru. This is the same protocol that happened with the last 39 men. We know that they are over in Nauru. I spoke to asylum seeker advocates previously that said that they, you know, contacted all those 39 men who'd previously gone over there. And it's the same with the 12 people who were discovered in November. So they've, you know, this is sort of the way that Australia's border policy, Operation Sovereign Borders, operates. That when people do arrive here by boat, they'll be transported overseas for offshore processing. And from there, you know, a decision will be made on whether to send them back home or whether they might be settled in another country. But as we know, with Operation Sovereign Borders, that policy says that people who do arrive by boat will not be able to settle in Australia.
ABC Kimberley reporter Roseanne Maloney, thank you for your time on Australia Wide today.
Thanks, Michelle.
ABC Australia Wide.
$10 million, but I'm going to sell them, make no mistake. At $10 million, take $500 more. At $10 million, last chance, done. Godspeed. Hold your applause, please. Hold your applause. We will follow her with great interest. Godspeed, young lady.
That was the moment the first foal of legendary race mare Winx sold for a record-breaking $10 million. Bidding for the 18-month-old filly started at $2 million at the Inglis Easter Yearling Sale in Sydney this afternoon. Now, Winx became a household name, notching up 25 Group 1 wins and a world record 33-race winning streak up until she was retired in 2019. And there were high expectations for the sale of her first offspring, touring, with the young horse drawing international attention in the lead up to today's auction. In the end, she sold to a local buyer, with the successful bidder being Winx's former part owner, Debbie Capitis, and her Wappet Bloodstock. The sale set an all-time record for a thoroughbred yearling and is more than double the $5 million paid for Black Caviar's half-brother in 2013. That's it for Australia Wide this Monday. I'm Michelle Stanley. I'll catch you tomorrow.